Do we have a quorum, Madam Clerk?
Yes, all members are present.
All right. Madam Clerk, can you share the board goals, please?
Matanuska, Susitna Borough School District, our vision, mission, beliefs, values, goals, and objectives. Our vision, Matsu Borough School District will be a model of excellence in teaching, learning, and engaging all students. Our mission, Matsu Borough School District prepares students for success. Beliefs, we believe that all students can and want to learn. Success breeds success. The needs and best interests of students drive all decisions. Stakeholders' participation is crucial to student success. Our core values, stewardship, accountability, empathy, quality, integrity, efficiency, respect, collaboration, commitment. Our goals, we will improve student success, achievement, and performance by focusing on career and college readiness. We will increase the graduation rate. Our schools will welcome families and community members in the education of our youth. We will create and maintain a safe and healthy environment for our students and staff. Our annual objectives are assessed by quarterly metrics and timelines.
Thank you, Member Wilton. I would like to ask Carly Williams, our new student representative, who's a junior this year at Palmer High School, to lead us in the pledge. Thank you. Can I have an approval of the agenda?
I move to approve the agenda as written.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to approving the agenda as written? All right, that passes. Our next order of business is person to be heard on non-agenda items. Sarah, can you go ahead and read what the rules are?
Under persons to be heard on non-agenda items, the following guidelines apply. The speaker states his or her name for the record. The speaker is limited to 3 minutes per meeting. The speaker is limited to non-agenda items. Agenda items will be open for public comment as they appear on the agenda. The speaker's comments should be appropriate for all audiences, including school-age children. The speaker is limited to comments of a general nature, positive or negative, which may not be attributable to any specific individual. Issues involving concerns specific to any single individual should be submitted in writing and given to the board clerk to be resolved. The issue may be determined to be appropriate for persons to be heard or may be handled in executive session or may be routed through a more appropriate complaint process. No disturbance or willful interruption of any board meeting shall be permitted. Persistence by an individual or group shall be grounds for the chair to terminate the privilege of addressing the meeting. The board may remove disruptive individuals and order the room cleared if necessary. This is not a question and answer time. Speakers may be referred to the superintendent or designee or take the issue under advisement. And there's a maximum of 1 hour per meeting, and this is our first half hour. First person to speak, Mike Coombs.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Coons from Palmer. I was not surprised, but still dismayed at the school board's refusal to allow teachers to be armed. You spent time and I'm sure money for a committee to review school safety. The public input, in my opinion, was a joke. You were given a detailed proposal to get armed, non-uniform security, but refused that proposal. Reason? Cost. Yet many dozens of teachers have voluntarily taken courses given free by the NRA specifically for teachers, and yet you refuse to use those good, solid citizens. Reason given by Dr. Palamo was insurance costs would increase. I'm here to tell you all that an active shooter comes into any Matsuyu school, expect your insurance to be paying out big with the lawsuits from parents because you chose to deny simple, common sense means of protecting their children. You had a retreat in June, part of which was to discuss this issue. I volunteered to be there to answer any and all questions pertaining to this issue. I have been debating the firearms issue for years and have heard just about every talking point of the extreme liberal socialists, or what I call the ELSers. Yet you refused that offer to get some education on the issue. Apparently you know all the concerns and decided to not protect the children. Well, if your knowledge base is anything like Mr. Chisholm's, you are in deep trouble. His concern to me over the telephone was that the children might get their hands on a gun. That another concern was the children knowing and seeing a firearm with a teacher. Easy answer then,
Mr.
and easy
Coombs,
if you brought up into
Mr.
June.
Mr. Coombs, we don't attribute things to individuals. Remember, in the directions it
this
said.
This was on telecon. This was a telephone conversation that I had with him. That's what I'm just repeating
okay,
what he said.
Okay, please refrain from naming people.
His concern to me over the telephone that, easy answer then. Okay, that is what concealed carry is all about, control and concealment. The most outlandish concern was teachers might leave their firearms in the bathroom behind the toilet. Members of the school board, and I won't use names, was that a deliberate slam on the smarts and intelligence of the teachers of the Matsu? The other comments were just as ill-informed and right out of the talking points out of ELS and anti-gun groups. In point of fact, denying teachers the ability to protect the children in their trust who have made the decision to train, arm, and put their lives on the line is even more a slap in the face than any other of these above comments. You had your chance to do something for the children that actually made sense, but have chosen not to. This reinforces my view that when people like you
invoke the children, I must and will continue grabbing the U.S. and Alaska Constitution of my law.
You're out of time, Mr. Coombs.
Terry Snyder.
Good evening, Madam President, members of the school board, Dr. Paramo, and others. My name is Terry Snyder. As you know, this is not my first time speaking to the board. I was a strong advocate of several past school bonds, and I spoke to not only this body, but also to the Borough Assembly and voters for approval of them. I am a strong, longtime advocate for education system for all our kids. Tonight, though, I'm appearing as the Matsu coordinator for a smoke-free Alaska workplace on behalf of the American Cancer Society Action Cancer Network. You may know that I was a very active member of the group that educated voters on the successful ordinance change that made Palmer the first smoke-free workplace city in the borough. It was from that work and the satisfying results of that change that I was happy to join ACS CAN and its partners to take what we were able to do locally to the statewide effort. More than half of Americans live in communities with smoke-free workplace laws, but many of the rest live in areas that are unable to enact a smoke-free workplace law due to limited power within their own local government. The next logical step is to go statewide and take a stand for all Alaskan workers. It's good for business, it creates a healthier environment for employees and customers, and it's the right thing to do. All Alaskans have the right to breathe smoke-free air. I'm personally proud of this district, who was proactive in making a change a couple of years ago in board policy to prohibit the use of tobacco on all school ground properties. Now I'm asking you to pass a resolution to support an Alaska smoke-free workplace legislation that will protect all of our school districts. It's important for the governor and the legislators to know their support for the law. The Alaska Cancer Society Action Cancer Network, American Lung Association, the American Heart Association, the America Stroke Association, and AARP are collecting resolutions and thousands of individual support cards from individual members of our communities. the Mat-Su Health Foundation, who is an important partner in health education in our community, has already supported the effort with their own board resolution. Our Valley is clearly concerned about all Alaskan health, the cost of health care, and proven strategies to reduce exposure to secondhand smoke. So to wrap it up, I'm asking that you put forward a resolution to support this endeavor. I sent along that by electronic email, sort of a suggestion of a resolution, and I hope that you'll consider introducing it at your next school board meeting and adapt it the meeting after. Thanks.
Lori Raybaid. Raybach. Sorry.
Hi, my name is Lori Raybach, and I'm a member of the board of directors of Lynx Parent Resource Center. And I'm just here to this evening right now to introduce myself and to offer Lynx Parent Resource Center as a resource for the school board, and also to represent parents of children who are in special education and who have disabilities. Thank you very much.
That is all who have signed up on the list. If anyone would like to come forward and be heard by the school board, now is your chance. We will have a chance a little bit later in the meeting if you're interested in waiting for that time. Okay, seeing none, we will move forward with administrative reports.
Thank you, Madam President. I am happy to share with you this evening that the Matanuska-Sisseton-Nabarro School District's committee for the new Kinnick Area Junior Senior High School has reached a 35% design presentation in hopes that the board would approve so that they may move forward. With that, I'm going to introduce Executive Director Mr. Mike Vervolo, who represented administration on the committee. Thank you.
Good evening, Madam President, School Board, and Dr. Paramo. I'm excited to be here tonight to help share the proposal for the 35% for the Kinnick Area Middle High School, Middle Senior High School. We have representatives from Wolf Architecture, NAC architectural firm, as well as Bob Bechtel from the borough, who is the project manager. We've been working since last spring thoroughly on this project. We've involved groups from instruction, from special education, from transportation, from maintenance and operation, as well as over 30 teachers that are content area specialists in each of the given areas for the middle and high school. They were involved in looking at what specifications they believed would be necessary for the school. So we tried to involve as many folks as we could that really understand the needs of a building. We've been spending, I'd say since last spring, we've probably met 10 times as a group on top of meeting with the staff. One of the real interesting aspects of the complex is it's set up for growth so that we can have a high school built later as well as a middle school. So all three schools in the planning phase are being developed so that we can have a high school later as the area grows for the in that high school, and the complex is set up to have that development ready in hand. With that in mind, I just want to introduce, like I said, Bob Bechtel, who's to my left, Randy, or Kevin Flanagan, I apologize, and Mr. Wolf from Wolf Architecture Firm, and they're going to give you a presentation on the 35% design.
Good evening, Dr. Paramo, Mrs. Powger, School Board. We're here to give the presentation for the schematic design for the Kinnick Area School. We've been working on it very hard, and Kevin Flanagan's come up from Seattle to work for us, and he's our partner architect, the educational specialist that we are teaming with. And so I think Kevin, you want to take this. We've had a great time working with the building committee on this project, and we have met about 10 times, and various phone calls, and a lot of work between Kevin's firm and our firm. Whoops. Whoops. Wrong way. Why don't you go back to the beginning? There you go. That thing only goes one way.
Mr. Folt, can you assist with the remote? And then we can start.
So is this the beginning or end of your slideshow?
This is the beginning.
Okay. You'll just click that way through. So use these. That
yeah. All right.
And
that I gotta push that.
No, just that.
Okay.
And then the top is the point.
All right. All right, there you go.
Sure. Well, as Mr. Verbalo indicated, we had a really great workshop sessions, sessions with the committee to help with the EdSpec planning as well as with the design. It was broad-reaching and involved a lot of input from different departments, different sectors that I think were really informative to help us proceed with the design that I think will be responsive to the educational needs. Some of the key points that came up that's really resonated over and over again was an importance to be responsive to the site and for the master plan, so that we're planning for one school now, but to plan so that in the future to have a high school built and to be able to convert the current middle school, high school into a middle school and to have this work as a cohesive campus. It was also important to the community aspect of this came up many times, and so that was an important aspect, too, that was discussed as being welcoming to the community and supportive of community environment. It was also important that the school be collaborative and flexible, as well as being efficient. And efficiency came up both as it came to energy efficiency, as well as being efficient with the programs. There's a lot of programmatic need that is desired at this school and that came forward in the meeting with the educators. But there's also some strict limitations from DEED as to how big the school could be. So it was really important to be as efficient as possible to maximize the educational opportunities.
So we were, knowing that it's in the fastest growing area in the Mat-Su and Kinnick, and we're being very sensitive to the community. We have a fairly sensible school in terms of the aesthetic of it, and it's going to be a great community center for the community, and we've taken advantage of the views of Mount Tusitna and hopefully to Denali, which is to the north, and we're able to have some trails to connect into some of the local trails there, so we think it'll be a real asset to the community. The site is located about, I don't know, a couple miles from the golf course, Settlers Bay out there, 103 acres. The access to the site is through a residential area, and it's off the Knickknack Mud Shack Road. And it's quite a hilly site. It has about 70 feet of fall to it. It's about half of it is wetlands, and so we're kind of had some challenges in terms of the soils contents. It's got some soils that retain water, which are fairly challenging. And the other challenge we have is that there are no utilities to the site as of yet. And so we're kind of working through some of these issues. And we were kind of put back a little bit on the schedule with the wet spring that we had. We had to get wetlands delineation in order to kind of define where the schools and the ball fields could go, because we can't build on top of the wetlands. And so we walked the site. The site is mostly birch, and we're clearing about 60 acres of this for the project. And there's a big power line off to the north, but we're hoping to be able to have views from Denali from the site. You can see it from the west end of the site, and also there's some great views of Mount Tusitna, so we're hoping to take advantage of those as well.
And as Gary mentioned, there's a lot of sloping topography that we have to deal with. And so the green lines on this drawing indicate the direction of the slope. And while there's a lot of fall across the site, it tends to go in one direction, at least in the more usable part of the site. And arrival to the site is off of Dagg Road, and that's sort of the high point, actually, of the piece of property. And from there, the grades go downward. And so in studying this, we've taken a look to try and learn how can we best use the topography to be efficient with the site, and to cut and fill the soils in order to create level areas. And in looking at that learning, as far as the creating more of a narrower building forms and benching the site is a efficient way to use this piece of land. And as we began the master planning process, we worked with the committee, and they explored a lot of different ways that two buildings might work cohesively on this site. And from their input, we began to study that more and looking at forms that could be, as I said, more linear to bench themselves, so we could bench the site to accommodate the building forms with them. And we studied different ways that the middle school and high school, once this is fully built out, can relate to each other. Ways that might allow for more co-location of common facilities, such as gymnasium and performing arts center type of facilities. Other options that had the buildings being more separate, and ones that maybe became hybrids that had some shared drop-off and other shared facilities. As we explored different options, we came up with a plan that would allow for, during phase one, the middle school to be developed on more of the west portion of the site, and while developing also the fields and more downhill on the piece of property, and all the development happening between the two large wetland areas. This allows for the phase two and the master plan of the high school to be constructed more on the westerly part of the site. And some of the good things about that is that when construction happens on the high school, that there won't be disruption towards the middle school as that occurs. And also in the future, when you have high school drivers on this site, it keeps them separate from the middle school traffic. And so the overall master planning works well, we think, for the long term as well as for the short term. Looking more in the long term, this type of master plan, it allows parking to be close to ball fields and allows more of a public and a community center area with the plaza area between the two schools. It creates a promenade to the play fields as well as bringing the more the public functions, the gymnasium parts of this, both the middle school and high school together. So again, it's really focusing on creating community spaces as well as great academic spaces.
So working through it sort of and some more technical information on the site, when we're master planning, we're looking at sort of access to the site and working with the fire marshal and trying to get access into the site in the future from more than one point. And this phase will only have one point of access, and we've acquired a couple additional pieces of property because of the topography is such that in order to get the road down to the level that the school is going to be and kind of make the pads for the ball fields in the schools, we're going to have to move about 240,000 cubic yards of material, which is it's a lot of material. And the fire marshal is wanting us to have 180,000 gallon water tank to serve for fire suppression for this facility, and we're going to also use it as the domestic water supply so that it'll have a dual function. And this water tank will cost about $2.5 million to install that, but it will be able to serve the water suppression needs for the middle school, the high school, and the elementary school that is going to be constructed sort of about the same time. So we've kind of been working, it's been taking a lot of time to kind of work through the topography and make sure that we can get ADA access around the site and be able to get all of the septic systems working. The septic system for this particular project is underneath one of the practice fields. It's that large, and it'll be a mounded system, and because the soils retain a lot of water, so in order to make that. So there's a lot of challenges we're working through the project here.
And just to add on with that is that this is a, while it feels like it's a large site, it gets smaller and smaller once we take out area for the wetlands and the topography. And what's really been an important focus for us is to get a technical understanding on the site, and so that we can really maximize the use of the site and all of the available areas, as well as to minimize the cost that needs to go in to develop the site. Moving from the site and more towards the building, again, working with the design committee, we explored a lot of different ways that the building might lay out, in different ways as far as of how spaces relate to each other, adjacencies, and relationship of different learning areas. And following the lead from the committee, we then, as architects, studied a lot of different plan options and reviewed them with the design committee. And after various iterations, came up with the design that is the preferred layout by the design committee. And with this layout, what this has is with north up, it has the main entry to the school, the administration, and most of the classrooms are south-facing, so they're getting a lot of good south light. And then to the right is the commons area, which opens up towards a courtyard. And that is the part that is sort of the welcoming vista as people arrive from Daig Road and drive around the drive towards the front entry. So it again is reinforcing that sense of a community and creating public spaces that are open and welcoming and visible. And with it, it provides the public spaces are more towards the right with the red block. There's the gymnasium and PE function areas next to the commons area, which also has a stage on it. And so it creates that hub of spaces that can be used for community functions. And then to the left side become the are the academic areas. And that can be separated from the public areas for after-hours use to secure the academic areas separately. But throughout the school, there's this connection of from the commons area through a large hallway space that helps for good movement of students through the school to the academic core. But there's a nice connection. There's creating collaborative areas with a wider space down at the left end where there's sort of the academic hub to allow academic collaboration happening separate from a lot of the public type of activities that could happen throughout the school. On the first floor, I should note that the that's currently planned to be where the middle school students would be, where the high school students would mostly be in the academic area on the second floor. The second floor will also have the library space that can be overlooking the commons area, and the art room also over the main entry and that purple block there, and also connected closely with the commons. Just to the left of the commons and stacking up on both floors is the I can make it go backwards. Next to the entry, the green block there would be a computer labs. The thought being that the computer labs might be something that could be used after hours, whether by senior citizen groups or other community use, or they could just be closed off, obviously separate. There's also been some discussion that perhaps in the future, computer labs won't be used as they are today, and so that they're designed so such that there's flexibility in how they could be used as a classroom if needed in the future, since it's oriented with outside light and could be open and flexible to be used in that sort of way. Also a note on the first floor plan that the purple classrooms on the north side, those would be special ed rooms, and so that after working a fair bit with the committee and the special ed programs, getting an understanding of the needs of those programs and providing good support spaces so that this school can address a wide range of educational needs throughout this area.
So I want to add on to that. So we're the ed spec allows us a little over 94,000 square feet of space, and this plan is very efficient with the circulation space, the hallway space, and so we are right on the money with that 94,000 square feet, which does not include sort of the fan room space, and we have two very large fan rooms up on the roofs of both of these.
That's a good point. Yeah. So really maximizing the educational areas there. In going forward as far as working with the committee to develop the form and the massing and the beginning to study the look of the building, things that were resonating frequently with the committee were this the sense of order and a sense of structure, and from that becomes a sense of, I think, composition and proportion and rhythm that develops with the school. So we're exploring forms that start to resonate with that while still allowing, I think, some interesting spaces, bringing in some great light into the school, and so that there's a very good supportive educational environment that is interesting and exciting for students, while we think as far as being a wonderful asset for the Kinnick area community. And then just kind of quickly looking at the different sides, this would show the the side where you'd see the approach from Dagg Road towards the courtyard and the gymnasium entrance to the right, while the main school entrance is towards the left. And the view from the south, where we have a great southern exposure with a lot of light coming into the school. Along the north, the classrooms on the north also receive good light, while we also have the CTE programs and service areas along the north with good service access. The gymnasium located both so that it's well connected for public areas, but also connecting well towards the play fields. And with that, I'll note of some of the other features of the school as it goes to focus on environmentalism and efficiency, that the school is designed to be, it's a compact building, and so it can be efficient both with space but also with energy. The building envelope is to similarly be designed to be very energy efficient, with a focus on well-performing mechanical systems and electrical and lighting systems to bring out a focus of energy efficiency. I noted the light, so that natural light will come into all of the classrooms and all of the learning areas, and that the inside, as I noted, was also designed to be collaborative, and so it's supportive of the educational programs that you have, but we think will also be flexible and adaptable for changes that will inevitably happen with the education moving forward into the 21st century. And so we think, as far as with the development of this building, we're creating a facility that will be durable, maintainable, and serve the borough and the district well for decades to come.
Thank you. Is there any questions for us?
Member Lacey.
Yes. Exactly what is going to be used to sheet the school on the exterior walls?
Well, we are studying that right now, but right at this current thought process, we'll be using insulated metal panels for the majority. That's where the kind of long linear ones. And then there's some infills, and we're kind of studying either some metal panels on those or some porcelain tile on a surface, because it's a pretty durable surface on some of the infills.
The reason why I bring this up is 2 weeks ago we took a field trip up to the various tracks we're building. And when we got to Houston High School, the same panels that I saw a year ago were still broken, and there are these funky plastic composite panels. I like the metal idea. Mm-hmm. Schools get vandalized. I would like to see these things fixed, because I was kind of shocked. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Member Rutherford.
I have two questions. The first is, could you talk a little bit about the entry design, given our thoughts now about secure entries and visibility of the office of everyone who comes in. And then secondly, it sounds like you had a lot of, you were very community-minded in this, which I really applaud. I was just wondering, looking at the people who participated, unless some of those employees lived in that community, how did you get that community input? I didn't see any like at-large community members on that group.
There were actually, I believe, faculty, or there were participants from the Kinnick area that were, I believe, faculty or other staff members through the school district that are from that area. And I'm trying to remember if there were parents also. I think it was a faculty member that was also a parent, is what my faculty member is also parents. As it relates to the entry and security, that's also something that has been discussed quite a bit, both internally as well as with the committee. As on the floor plan to the administration area is the yellowish block on the bottom right, and to the left of that is the entry vestibule. And the thought on security access is that visitors arriving to the school would enter through the doors into that security vestibule, and from there, after the school day has started, the doors into the rest of the school would be locked through access control, and so the people would then need to enter in through the reception area to check in before then leaving the reception area to go into the portion of the school to to where the areas where they need to go. A couple other things as it goes to security is some thoughts on creating good visibility and sight lines and being very maintaining good supervision throughout was important. The idea of this very gently sloping curve is one that means that there's no hidden nooks and corners where people can hide behind, and so that there's a generally a continuous sight line through there. However, doing it just as a straight line added too much area that didn't meet with deeds criteria. And so, but that said, as far as wanting to have good visibility and monitoring throughout.
Member Cordero?
This might seem like a silly question, but when you talked about durable and decades, how many decades are we talking about?
For you mean for materials?
For the school, the life of the school, the life of the building.
The building's going to be there for 100 years or more. I mean, it's they're very durable materials.
All right.
Materials,
you.
And they'll, you know, it'll be there for a long time.
The carpet will wear out before 100 years.
Right. Yeah. Good point.
Member Larson.
Just to follow up on Member Ruffer's comments, and it's probably more towards the school district, Dr. Paramo. How are we going to get the information out to that community? I was talking to a teacher at Big Lake, and she said, where's the Kinnikinnick Mudshack Road? She never heard of it. Much less that the school is going to go out there. And are we going to have placards on the highway saying this is our, you know, what's the plan for that community to know that they actually have a high school in the process of being built? Besides, of course, it's great on our website, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if the community really realizes it.
Through the president. Interestingly enough, just to get our school name, we actually contacted and identified all the secondary students who would be in the boundary for this school, possibly. And so we requested personally, you know, through a Connect Ed to participate in the school naming and provided the information to review on the website about the school and things like that. Once, you know, as we go through this process and have the 35% design approved, generally we then post these. We'll advertise it in our school district news through Catherine Essery and things like that. But generally it happens after the 35%. So we left school just barely purchasing the property, and this work that they've completed is pretty much over the summer. And so now that we're back in the swing of things, we'll move forward. But in July, we did send out, not to elementary school folks, though, but to secondary folks who could possibly be members, we sent out over 1,000 messages on ConnectEd about their school to assist in naming it as well.
Just one follow-up. Is there going to be something on the highway that indicates that a new school is in the process of being built there?
We can make that happen, yes.
Yeah.
We're also working on the road to get to the school from that highway. So
I realize that, but the reason I keep saying that is because I know a lot of people drive that road going up, and they have no clue that we're, you know, they may not have kids going into high school. But eventually, I'd like to see the whole community know it's going to be there and then have some sort of town meeting later on with these two gentlemen explaining what will happen like next summer. I assume we're going to start building next summer. I guess that's all up to the borough, but I assume that that's what's going to happen. It's exciting stuff. But like this teacher out of Connects here, just shocked. What do you mean? She knew there was a new high school somewhere, but she didn't know the road, didn't know the location. Thank you.
And through the president, we will get a future home of the. Once we have a name this evening, we'll have we'll make a sign that of the future home of that high school.
Are there any other questions and comments, Member Cheesham?
And just a request for. For future reference, because this is about all the new schools, if we could have a report on what the earthquake rating is, how we figure out what you know, what how much time and how on the scale these buildings are rated to stand, and are we thinking of all of our schools as first of all safe places for the school, but also as places if everything else is destroyed that people can come to the school for shelter.
I can answer that. So schools are considered an essential facility, and they are designed to the highest standard available, and so they get extra steel and extra seismic connections, and they're thought about as being a facility that needs to stand when nothing else is standing.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, so we're going to move on to borough and city reports. I see Palmer City here. If you want to come up and introduce yourself, make your report.
Thank you, Madam President, members of the school board, Dr. Paramo. My name is Doug Griffin. I'm the city manager for the city of Palmer. Welcome back. Sort of like your first day of school. And I know you didn't get quite as long of a break. Just to kind of report about some of the things that have been happening in the city of Palmer. And, of course, we're gearing up for our big event here at the end of this month. But we did have a Palmer Pride celebration on the 24th and recognized Jack Snodgrass as our Citizen of the Year. Of course, Jack is from a long-standing family here in the Valley. And also Janet Kincaid received some special recognition from Mayor Johnson for she's supposed to be kind of easing out of putting on this Palmer Pride event, but she was still sort of called on to do that. The Alaska State Fair starts August 22nd, so get your tickets, get lined up for that. And the city, working with the fair and the Greater Palmer Chamber of Commerce, is planning a parade on August 24th. With some of the fair performers and acts involved with that, a way to bring a little bit of the fair this way. This last year, I know you've got your share of funding from the state. We are planning, it's not going to, next year to start our, sort of the last phase of our old steel water main replacement project, and it is going to be in this vicinity. One of the streets affected will be Gulcana Street. And then a couple of the smaller streets. We're hoping to get started actually with a little piece along Auclet Street this fall just to use some money that's available to the city. But we're kind of facing the end of the building season with that, so that's going to be a little bit of a challenge. But just to let you know, that's probably going to be a project that's going to be done in stages over the next two or three building seasons starting next year. Replacing, but that should provide you better water pressure and more reliable water to your elementary schools and to probably this building as well. So thank you for your attention.
Thank you. We are down to our Student Advisory Board representative report. I realize that you don't have a report yet because you probably haven't got together. But if you just want to kind of introduce yourself, say where you're going, what your area of interest in is, your studies.
Okay. I'm Carly Williams. I'm a junior at Palmer High School this year. I actually do kind of have something to report. Our executive board has already had our preschool meeting. So we've met, we've set our goals for this year, and we're hoping to bring a lot of resolutions and a lot of new ideas to the board this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Paramo.
Thank you, Madam President. School's going to start here pretty shortly. We're looking forward to August 15th and school readiness. I did want to report to you that the number of students registered through iParent, which is our only means electronically to register, even when we assist parents, we assist them with facilitating the use of a computer. So there really isn't any paperwork anymore that is actual paper. 10,871 students are registered. And again, remember, we expect about 17,500. If we compared this number to as many days as before school to last year, we actually have an increase of 492 students. And so when we study trends, we just keep an eye on them to see and to be prepared. This could be an increase of students. It could be an increase of iParent, an understanding of iParent. There's many, many ideas of possible reasons why we're about 500 kids ahead. We'd like to believe that it is new students. Brand new students to our district this year, we have 374 already registered. This doesn't worry us that we're about 7,000 off because just like our taxes on April 15th, many folks just wait up right until the line. So, but even if students and parents don't get the registration completed online, if kids show up, we will have desks, we will have IDs for them and facilitate them coming to school the first day. If they were with us in the past, we do roll over their names and do expect them. But we make many, many calls and facilitate as much as we can to assist our community. There are currently 6,444 active iParents accounts, which is one per family. We didn't count the families that are living in the same household. 1,600 iParent support emails have gone out, as well as hundreds of calls. So we're hoping that our community's needs are served at the same time, just getting ready for school. Last year, through registration, we did have some forms that needed to be signed because we did not have them online, and one of those was the student insurance form because they needed a signature of having received the information in regard to state law. However, we were able to work with Meyer-Stevens and the TUI student insurance, and we were the first school district where they facilitated a pamphlet with an electronic number which served as the parent's signature for having received the information. So our partners, not only on the education side but also on the business side, are moving forward with the times and responding to the needs of a school district that went online for registration totally. Impact aid as well is no longer sent home on a separate form right at registration. Those items are flagged so that we can facilitate all of that paperwork and regulation easier. So we're hoping to get better at your paperless goal and helping our community. And I do want to make note that the younger the student a parent has, the easier it is for the parent to do this. It's most of us who have high school kids that struggle sometimes with facilitating this, but generally the younger the student, the more eager parents are to make sure that it's online. So we're quite happy to report that. We did receive preschool funds, as you know, from both a competitive state grant and legislative appropriations. And I wanted the board to know that there is an additional 130 spaces for four-year-olds to participate in a general education preschool class this year. So we will continue to do our intensive student support services preschool, but we also have 130 spaces due to grants as well as your board agenda and legislative agenda. Remember, $450,000 was granted for our preschools. Trapper Creek, Willow, Talkeetna, Goose Bay, Shaw, Palmer High School, and Butte schools will all have preschools. We partner with Head Start to encourage students first to come to our child find, then we facilitate them through Head Start, which is a community program. If they don't qualify for Head Start, we encourage them to come back to us. Our goal isn't to compete with local businesses and local private preschools, but to facilitate any parent with a need for a student where they'd like to have them in preschool. We also have Title I preschools at Meadow Lakes and Iditarod. So there's 11 schools with general education preschool in them now. We had reported previously that over 100 students are now enrolled in the Alaska Middle College, which more than doubled this year. It's becoming quite popular. So our new programs are off and running. But we do say in the district, we love having new facilities. We passed the largest single school bond in the state. But really what makes up a good school district are the people in the organization, and that's both our employees and our students and our families. And we, over the last week, have been working on in-services for teachers and and secretaries and principals, building the capacity of the people in the organization to grow their skills, really to continue to grow and be the best school district in the state. With that, we have some changes around the state, and I wanted to share that as I've received several questions, and I believe the board has as well. I do have this for the audience to take a look at as well. Stacy Escobedo will get that up there for us, or they'll switch it over. Okay. For the audience, I will, there we go. They'll just have to make that a little bigger. Zoom in on that if they can. What we've created in the instruction department is an understanding of some of the changes in the state. And our goal, as well as we heard loud and clear at the board retreat, that the goal is to really to support teachers in the changes and support our educators and employees of the district to move through the changes that are coming about in standards, assessments, and evaluation. And this is just a quick review for the board, and we can certainly answer questions. We can even have a work session in the future. But when we talk about the new standards, a lot of the discussion around the country is really about the Common Core standards, and they are causing some controversy. However, Alaska adopted its own standards. They needed to be their own, but highly aligned to have as much rigor, if you will, and that's what the federal government was looking for. But if you take a look at the history of state standards, since 1996, schools and teachers and students and families really have been exposed to standards. The first content standards came out in 1996. In 2001, we had what was called performance standards. So one is about the subject. The performance is what can the student do. And since then, we had grade level expectations, which takes those performance standards and breaks them down into this is what a third grader should do. This is what a fourth grader should be able to do. We really are in the fourth generation of new standards called the Alaska standards, highly aligned, if you will, or similar to Common Core. But the state of Alaska did not want to unilaterally just adopt the standards in their entirety. And if they did not do that, they had to create their own standards that would be approved by a post-secondary organization. And President Gamble of University of Alaska did support the Alaska standards. And that is why the state was able to get a waiver to move away from it. But why new standards? Really, Alaska was reported to be weaker, that we had weaker standards than other states. Only one-third of Alaskan students were proficient when we compared ourselves across the country. Previous standards began in third grade and ended in 10. The new standards have a path from kindergarten through 12th grade. The big word that they're using is an increase in rigor so that our graduates are competitive, not only around the state and around the nation, but around the world. Social media has certainly made it the world a little flatter. And so these standards are to be sure that Alaska kids are prepared just as well as any other student. There is some concern about federal control, state control, and local control. In the media, you might know that there is a concern that we're moving away from Jeffersonian times of local control and the government is getting bigger. And I would say that that is the primary concern. But again, Alaska did not adopt the Common Core standards because they did not agree with the entirety of the standards. So they are not bound by the restrictions set out in Common Core. And please note, the standards don't tell teachers how to teach, and nor do they place limits on our curriculum. If you know, in MATSU, we are continuing with our curriculum cycle, which is your board policy 6141, every 6 years, as outlined in statute 4AAC 5.080. The state mandates that we must review curriculum every 6 years. We're continuing on that cycle. We're not changing. The assessment will be new. This is the last year that we'll use what we call the standards-based assessment. We've been using standards-based assessment and the benchmark since 2001. So we've been assessing students for quite some time. It will be a new right now. The district, the state is looking at smarter balance, but they're an advisory state. They're not an adopted state. Finally, performance evaluation. There is a new regulation on performance of students being included in teachers' evaluation, and MATSU is working with our educator experts, administration, human resources, as well as our union to develop our own teacher and principal evaluation models here in the district. So the board, that will be brought before the board for approval in a work session first in November when the work is complete, a month before you would have to vote on that. And I just wanted to share this as we've been getting questions here in the district. Our principals have been receiving questions, but we are responding to our community and what they believe their children should learn as well through you as well as your, they're your constituents. But it's also we focus on what's doing the right thing for kids as well. And we're going to hopefully continue to communicate that and let folks know that we are following the law. We're not breaking any law. We're providing the best we can for our kids for learning. But we do need to really be transparent in what's coming down in regulation and state statute, as well as what is really locally and what we do have influence. And I know that was a long superintendent update, but I think it was pretty important as we start this new school year. I have other papers that really give examples of new questions that the standards might propose on an assessment. The standards themselves, I believe, if parents look at it, employers look at it, they'll say, wow, that's something kids should know. But it's the idea, I believe, again, that education isn't, it's always been a state's job, and there is this push and pull between the federal government and the state government. But I want you to know that our educators, we're going to prepare them and support them as much as we can to do a great job with kids.
Member Cordero.
Thank you, Madam President. And Dr. through the President, Dr. Paramo, I appreciate the presentation. I think I have shared some of the concerns and questions that I've been getting from members of the public, and this is just very timely and very useful. The only question that I had was if only one-third of Alaska students were proficient based on the national assessments and our standards were raised, what are some of the tools that the state is giving school districts or some of the changes that we have to do to help our kids actually achieve better? Because we can raise the bar, but if we're already having problems, what are we doing to fix that? Thank you.
Through the President, of course, building capacity in teachers to do the job, really to improve a system, is the teachers. The teachers are sitting in front of the kids daily. What our district is doing is looking at the national math and science teachings that ExxonMobil is assisting with and going through the Rasmussen Foundation. But additionally, the actual assessments themselves are asking the questions similar to the national NAEP test. Our assessments didn't ask the questions in the same manner. And for instance, in English, on the English test previously, you would read a passage on, I already used Jefferson once. You'd read a passage on a former president, Jefferson, and then it would ask, in your own words, what was a time that you faced a struggle? Rather than requiring the student to actually go back in the text and look for information, they would read, but then the objective on the writing was totally separate. So technically, kids didn't even have to read the assignment if they just answered the question. And so when our kids took national tests, they weren't prepared to answer coherently the same questions that they were used to practicing. And so you treasure what you measure. If we know that kids will need to review text, find important information in text, and create an argument, we need to teach them how to do that. And we teach what kids need to learn. And so our teachers are learning different ways and techniques for questioning of students and different ways and techniques for students to answer questions so that they would see those in the future. Where our kids did better was on AP tests. AP teachers, that's exactly what they teach. They teach kids how to scan text, pull out information, and create an argument. We're essentially taking skills that were only available to certain classes and really teaching all kids. So it's really going deeper into an idea rather than a smattering of wide. It's actually getting kids better at certain skills. And so we're learning how to do that in our teaching and supporting teachers through that. So in MATSU, that's what we're doing. As far as the rest of the state, I can't answer that, sorry. Yeah.
Just a quick follow-up on assessments. Once the state of Alaska the Department of Education, they determine what type of assessment to use. Is the school district going to evaluate the assessments that we currently have to determine whether or not we're over-assessing? Because one of the things I hear from some of the teachers in classrooms is that we're actually doing too much assessments and too much time is being spent on assessments and not necessarily on one-on-one with the students.
Yes, and in fact, there is a change in assessment this year of a primary assessment in grades kindergarten and first grade away from the measures of academic progress to something that primary teachers actually said that they could use more for student information. The assessments that we provide district-wide are curriculum-based measures on AIMSWeb, which are basically are taken in about 10 minutes, which is the primary grades. And then, of course, we use MAP to let us know. The assessments we use are, if we don't use the data, we don't give the assessment. And so that's why we fought so hard to get rid of the Terra Novas, because when we asked the state, what do you do with them, they responded, we don't have time to do anything with them. So we've chosen assessments and used them for our response to intervention process to be sure we target what kids need to know next. Kids that are advanced should not be learning what they already know, and kids that don't know something, we should be teaching them the building blocks so that they won't get behind and to make up that learning. So I would confidently say that many of the assessments in MATSU that we use, the large ones, district-wide, are used for purposes to be able to teach kids better. But we always need to assess that about how much class time is used for teaching, how much is used for assessing. But if you use your assessment to teach, they are quite valuable.
Member Larson.
The performance evaluation that we're working on for teachers, principals, which will eventually utilize 50% of classroom as an evaluation tool. Will the state develop one different from us, or how are we going to coordinate this evaluation with, say, a state standard? Because I assume there will be a state standard on this performance evaluation.
Currently, we do have state standards, and each individual district designs their own evaluation system to meet those standards and how to measure them. That occurs currently. So each district is given the authority to create their system in working with their education community to provide that. So, but it is based off of state standards of what teachers should be able to do. But the regulation for 20% of that in the future years starting will have to be 20% will be based on student data. In within 5 years, 50% of that. So they've set those regulations and those standards, but we customize it. So they standardize it, and then we can customize it in MATSU, so much so that we can pick some of the other assessments. Between 2 and 4 assessments may be utilized, and the state will let us know probably. The state test, which might be called the national test, is definitely going to be one of those. However, our team that's working on this will be able to choose the others, and there's a possibility that teachers will be able to choose maybe the assessments that they would like to use. So we're looking at a model that through research was presented, but we are able to customize that to meet our needs.
There's one follow-up, if I may. Does that include the evaluation, the teacher evaluation through performance will be independent of all other districts? Our district will have a performance evaluation that has standards and will be able to utilize up to eventually 50% of that evaluation will be child performance or the classroom performance. Now, is that whole standard, once it's developed, going to be separate from, say, Anchorage, Fairbanks, on all the other districts?
Go ahead.
That evaluation?
Through the president, yes. And that is currently the way things run now. There is not going to be one state evaluation form. Each district can design their own evaluation forms as long as they meet the requirements of the statute. And part of those requirements of what you mentioned, the percentages that must be included in the evaluation, and the timeline is a statute, but the actual design of the form and the inputs into there are based on standards, but our local group gets to design those. And excuse me, and the local school board is the approval of it, not the state.
Okay, Member Cheesham.
Can we get a sense of how much, in terms of time, in terms of the cost of the tests themselves, and so forth, what we're spending on assessment versus what we're spending directly on instruction? That's one question. And then the other question, why don't I let you answer that question first?
Through the President, I will provide that, but it is probably less than a quarter of a percent. What we spend on our budget is almost $200 million, and what we spend on assessments is well below, so it's less than 0.000, well below, you know, 500,000.
All right, thank you. I think we're moving on to the bond project update. I'm sorry.
Yes, Madam President. Luke Fulp, our Chief Business Officer, will provide a brief update on the fields and the major construction going on in buildings such as Big Lake and Palmer and the fields, as well as your capital improvement fund, which is improving schools as well.
Thank you, Dr. Promo. Madam President, members of the school board, I'm pleased to present to you tonight a bond project update. I have Mr. Bob Bechtold here, and just want to really point out the great cooperation and partnership that has existed this past construction season with the borough and the project managers and the Department of Public Works at the borough. There's a lot of work taking place, and I think that in terms of streamlining and fast-tracking certain projects like the roof replacements, the fields, getting those repaired and fully functional, a lot of progress has been made, and it's in large part due to the cooperation that exists between us and the borough. So on that note, I have Bob Bechtold here. He has intimate knowledge with these projects. I will lead off with one project that talks about the really speaks to the cooperation that exists at this point. This is the playground schedule, and before I get Bob started, I'll just mention that with the playgrounds, although they were a bond project, the borough LOA'd, which means letter of authorization, sent us the money or the authorization to make expenditures. We will then be reimbursed with bond funds, funds from the bond sale, so that this is a project more or less that the district manages, but it is a bond project, and we did this so that we could fast-track it, get the playgrounds in place. We're working on that right now. We're hopeful that by the end of September we will have all playgrounds in the ground and ready for use at these elementary schools. So we have two crews currently working. One is a basically a crew going out ahead of the first that's drilling holes in the playgrounds, and then the crew following that is installing the playgrounds. So we're trying to keep pace with everything and to get these installed as fast as possible. But on that note, I will turn it over to Mr. Bechtold, and he will discuss the other bond projects.
You can hold that.
You want me to take care of it?
Please.
I will.
Madam President, school board members, and Dr. Paramo, great to be here and excited to explain some of the accomplishments this summer from school bond projects. The day school being one of those. I don't know if you've been over in that area near off of Bogard Road, but the day school is in construction. FE Contracting is working on that and doing a great job. Also, Valley Pathways, we're moving forward on that. Last December, I gave you a schedule of design, construction, a schedule for all the bond projects, and basically we are tracking with most of that. 99% of that is on track. Athletic complex, there was a tour given last week to school board and assembly members. Athletic complexes have been on the move. Today we did a substantial completion inspection of all four of those, and the goal there is to keep people off the field till the 15th so that we can have our final inspection, although I know that's difficult because people are anxious to be out there. I don't know if you noticed it, but the fields look awesome. They have great amenities all around, and we've done excellent work there. Davis Construction has done an excellent job. Jeff Walden was a project manager, and real smooth work at all four sites. Roof replacements, we had a short notice back in April to have the roofs replaced. The school bond was amended from the previous school bond was amended to allow us to add four schools. The only one we were not able to get to was Trapper Creek, and that'll be done next summer. That is advertised right now for design, and we'll have a design done, and we'll be advertising this winter for construction next summer. Colony High, they're 90% complete with the work there. That's being done by Wolverine Supply and Johnston Roofing, and that's what the pictures you see there. Swanson Elementary is probably 95, 96% done. They just have some coping to do. And Big Lake Elementary School has been done for a while, with the exception of the coping, metal coping on the edge. And all those roofs are in excellent shape for, we have a 30-year warranty on all three of those. If you have any questions for me.
I had a question about Big Lake Elementary.
Sure.
I went out there, and it seems like I know they're a little behind on their progress. When are they going to be able to use that front entrance instead of going around through the gym? Do you know?
I do not, Madam President. I'm not sure of the answer for that, but I do know that our project manager is coordinating with the principal to let them know when that'll be available. The only things remaining on the roofing part is that we want to replace the ceiling tile in the gym because they were in pretty bad shape to begin with, and we knocked about half of them off when we're re-roofing, which is typical. And that's the only thing remaining on the roofing project. On the other, on the front portion of the building, the older portion of the building, that's going to be gutted and repaired. We're hoping to make big strides this fall. They should be able to be back in there then. And it's being done by Wolverine Supply. But we're coordinating with the principal there. I know there are some people surprised, but they really... There shouldn't have been a whole lot of surprise based on the work that was advertised and the fact that we have been talking to them. I'll make sure that I'll follow up on that for you.
Okay.
And I do appreciate your questions. And, Madam President, to the school board member Lacey, that did torque me off about the Houston High School envelope, and that I have already talked with an architect, and we'll have that fixed next summer, I promise. Thank you.
Member Rutherford.
I just had a question for a superintendent, I guess, about some of these projects that go into the school year. A few of the playground pieces are going to be put in after school starts, and there'll be contractors. And I went to a little opening at, I think it was Academy Charter School, that had a situation where they had contractors on site during the school year. And they did, when it was done, they had a little yay, the project's done celebration, and they invited several of the contractors and some of the crew that had been there every day to come during the school day to a little celebration, and they actually had the kids thank them for all their work, and those contractors were so touched and really, really appreciated being made a part of that celebration. And I was just hoping that all our principals that have to put up with this construction this fall will think about doing something like that.
Through the president, we will certainly share that. That is a great idea. Thank you.
All right, Madam President, I'll just continue on with the capital improvement projects, if that pleases the board. And just to touch on the Big Lake project, the district has been working with that school to make sure that they have the proper accommodations during this construction phase. We've relocated a portable to that site. We've made some adjustments with where their daycare facility is. We've moved that to Houston Middle School temporarily, separate day school, preschool program. And we've just been working alongside them to make sure that things are working in good order with regards to security and other measures. And at this point, I believe the latest update, and Bob can get us an update from his staff over there at the borough, but the latest update that we received from John Harris, that project manager, was a substantial completion was set for November 30th on that project. Capital improvement projects, one of the largest ones that we did, and we used our capital improvement project fund, the CIP fund, over the summer to complete work, much-needed work around the district. So this is not bond project, facility projects taking place, non-bond projects. It was to move the advanced path. So we basically eliminated consolidated the advanced path program by moving it from Wasilla High School and Valley Pathways and creating a space at Burchell. And the pictures there, you can see that's the front or the south side of Burchell High School. The reason why this was a project, why we couldn't just move Advanced Path into a designated space and call it good, was because Advanced Path actually, as a part of the contract terms, has certain specifications in terms of the facility, the carpeting, flooring needs, as well as the wiring and whatnot. So we made sure that we worked in cooperation with Advanced Path to make sure that we designed this space to meet their specifications and make it a lively center for the students at Burchell. The project was completed this month, and we utilized a student workforce to do this work, much like the current room that you're in. Barry Osifa received some updates in terms of digging and replacing parking lots, new playground updates in the front entrance of the school. They had cubbies built for student supplies and whatnot. It was painted, and then an emergency generator also installed. So lots of updates, and as well as furniture, new furniture. So that school got some attention, this much-needed attention this summer, and was not forgotten. Snowshoe Elementary, a more mechanical system upgrades in terms of their water system, and basically they needed their water tank cleaned and updated in terms of the floats. They also have, you can see in the picture here, access to that tank is through the gym floor. We worked with the borough to get that floor replaced this summer so that we could have access to that water tank. And so that is going to have, it's currently in process, but that floor will be replaced and installed before the school year starts. Goose Bay Elementary, as identified within recent Board Connect that you received, their septic and leach field basically was not leaching, and so what we had to do was increase the size of that leach field. That work was done by our maintenance department. They also replaced some pipes and whatnot within the current system, and gave the Goose Bay a facelift with exterior paint as well. And then to round it out, we used student workforce as well for grounds, parking lot, ceiling, and painting, and then also job shadowing. There were certain interests in different trades and areas, and our maintenance department made sure that those students had access to different folks to basically job shadow and see what's involved in fields such as electric and whatnot. And then lastly, one of the CIP funds items or projects within the CIP fund was furniture replacement refresh. We undertook this project this past summer. It began in the spring 2013, where we sent one individual out to assess and do a district-wide audit review of furniture. They came back with extensive notes and photos that we reviewed and discussed in terms of the condition of the furniture, in which case that prompted us to establish a system in which we could equitably address furniture needs throughout the district. We talked about what would constitute a furniture condition index and how do we create one. We had to do some research online and found that there was different conditions that we could use, but we came up with a Likert scale, a scale that can be used for various employees throughout the district. So everyone from custodian, teacher to principal can assess furniture the same way, utilizing this 5-point Likert scale. We gave them specific descriptions as to what condition the furniture would be in, as well as an illustration, although it is a graphic, it tells them kind of an idea of where it's at along the Likert scale. So what we're hoping to do is to create equity across the district with this model. Again, the focus this past season and what we identified the needs were. We identified classroom furniture as being a major need of refresh. So what we've done is this past summer we used CIP funds to order student desk chair combos as well as computer labs with wire racks and whatnot to make sure that those computer labs are safe and that the wires are taken care of and managed, not a tripping hazard. We also looked at standardization. Our purchasing department has identified through building new facilities has identified what chairs and tables work well, which ones are durable over time. And so we looked for value, durability, and also consistent look and feel so that we could create chairs that could be moved around the district without disrupting the look and feel and consistency of furniture. So that was a positive thing, and furniture has already been delivered, and more is on its way being delivered to schools around the district. That's the update. Are there any questions?
Member Lacey.
Yes, I'd like to go back to the moving the computer program from Wasilla to Burchell. Does that include that portable that's on the east side of the school that's going away?
Through the chair, no, it does not.
The reason why I ask this is because that is a uncontrolled access point for security for our schools. If that portable could be moved to within a sphere of control, that would be a much better thing. Over the 11 years I worked there, I saw some pretty unsavory characters get through there before I got to them. So something to think about.
Thank you.
Member Larson.
Oh, thank you. Noticing all the projects and work that's being done in the summer, I assume a lot of it's going to be carried on through the winter through our own maintenance and our own staff. And with kids in school, I work facilities similar to this where you would have a crew working like a swing shift or weekends or a flex schedule where they could get the work done, not with kids running all the way around and or administrative staff. Is that what's going on with our district where these projects can continue as well as routine maintenance projects such as boilers, fixing lights, light bulbs, you know, similar to the night custodians working? Does this maintenance, is it a continuous process? You don't have to answer it today, but that we're, our maintenance does a lot of maintenance, a lot of projects off hours away from kids so they can not worry about tools, not worry about you know, children getting in the way or hazardous type things going on. Thank you.
Through the president, Member Larson, I'll just address that briefly. Yes, with the bond projects, of course, we work with the contractors to keep them away from instruction and not impede on instruction during the school day. With our own staff, we are evaluating and will continue to evaluate the most effective means of getting at projects and making sure meaningful work is accomplished during the school year. So it is something that administration is looking at. We will continue to assess it and be responsive to that need.
Member Rutherford.
Just a quick thank you, because I can hardly contain myself about the furniture metrics that you put together. I really appreciate that. It was one of my issues that, as you know, I brought up, that I know that some staff thought they were being very frugal, and they were in, you know, taping together things, but the effect was a community member would go into one school and see new beautiful furniture, go into maybe perhaps their own neighborhood school and see things falling apart, and they wouldn't see it as staff being frugal. They'd see it as, well, why is my school getting this short end of the stick? You know, and this creates, is just one more step toward equity, which is among all our schools, which is so important for the public, I think.
Thank you.
Dr. Perlmo.
Thank you, and I just want to make it known that it is very difficult to get the furniture out as well. So we said, you're not getting your new stuff unless you put the old stuff so we can pick it up. But I just wanted to make two last comments. One is that our bus fleet passed 98%, the highest in the state, their inspection. So we did get the top score in the state, and 90% are ready for the road, and the 2% are being addressed. And then finally, you didn't get a chance to meet these two people, but I would like our administration, our principal and assistant principal, if they could come forward just a bit so you can put a name with a face. Mr. Ben Howard is the principal of Houston Middle School. You approved his contract back in June, and since then we did hire an assistant, and you will review his contract today, and is Mr. Oren Ware. And so I promise that it was a requested from the board that they meet our new folks to see who they are, and this is them. If you'd like to just say hello.
Greetings, yes, Madam President, School Board members, Dr. Paramo. My name is Ben Howard, the new principal at Houston Middle School. I came from the Bering Strait School District as a teacher, principal, as well as a district office administrator. And I have to say that the mission of the school board, preparing kids for success, really is alive at Houston Middle School. We've got parents coming in, registering their students. We've got schedules being built, teachers in training. So we're really excited about that, and thank you for the opportunity.
Hello, Madam President, Board, Dr. Paramo. This is my fifth year in the district. I am transferring over from, I was at Wasilla High School for the past couple of years, teaching resource math, and am very excited about the opportunity to work with Mr. Howard and the staff out at Houston Middle School. So thank you.
And Madam President, that is my superintendent's update.
Okay, I am calling a 10-minute break, and we will come back after 10 minutes and move on to the consent agenda. Thank you.
Stacy.
Madam President, I move the consent agenda A, minutes June 5, 2013, B, minutes June 8, 2013, C, 14-006, recommendation for certified new hires, D, 14-008, permission to apply for American Honda Association Youth Education Grant, E, 14-009, permission to accept, expend K-12 obesity prevention grant.
I'd like to second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Member Larson had a something he wanted to pull out. Go ahead, Member
Larson.
Yeah,
I would request to pull out E, 14-009, just for discussion, please, and vote.
Okay, can we go ahead and approve the consent agenda minus item E? Is there any objection to approving items A, B, C, and D? Okay, seeing no objection, those items pass. Item E, Member Larson.
Well, I'll move item...
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'll move item E, 14-009.
Okay, can you hold on a minute, Mr. Larson? Sure. Go ahead, Mr. Cheesen.
Just want to, for the record, that it was also in the consent agenda was F and G.
No, F and G are in
action items. Okay, sorry.
All right, so go ahead, Mr. Larson.
It was my cold.
I move item 14-009, K-12.
I'll second it.
All right, that's been moved and seconded. Mr. Larson, go ahead.
Reading through the grant, it's a five-year grant, is that correct, with matching from... Matsu Health Foundation, and I think it's a great grant, and I see that we're going to have another staff involved and possible school board changes on the whole issue. I guess what I'm looking for is updates on what this grant does within our school district over the next, next 4 years in increment, and to see what the results of this grant is going to do for our district instead of just approving a grant and then not knowing what the results were. I'm pretty excited about it, and I just want to see the feedback on the results. Thank you.
Dr. Promo.
Madam President, if you'd like a short, brief, just overview, we can provide that right now by Dr. Goyette.
if you prefer. At the board's, okay. Dr. Goyette, could you please come forward and share in 2 minutes or less this good thing we're going to do here?
My first time up here, and you already put me under pressure. This grant is designed to, there are measures built in that we have to report on quarterly, and over the course of 4 years, what they're hoping to see is, according to our height and weight measurements, like through the nurse, that kids are documented that they're healthier than they are at the start of this. We're going to have, hopefully, more activities, non-competitive recreational activities, K-12 for kids. The grant will support that. And hopefully one of the goals of the grant is to become a bronze level through our nutrition services and just continue to increase our school policies regarding health and nutrition. For example, it's encouraged at schools that meals coming in like by parents are healthy. But I can tell you, coming from an elementary, there's a lot of birthday parties there. And so maybe working with school teams to really put out more advertising with parents and really making sure that when kids are in our building that they're having healthy meals, both that they purchase and that are provided through volunteers. Additionally, another thing that recently came up, the food pantry would like to start offering meals in the summer to our kids that might not have access to healthy meals. That's something that we would coordinate through the wellness program. And, of course, a goal for you is employee wellness, and that would be coordinated through this program as well.
Just one follow-up. I assume that the policies that are going to be placed over the next 4 years aren't. I've seen a lot of grants come in, they do wonderful things, and then boom, you know, the whole thing just goes away when the grant goes away. So are you looking to put permanent solutions in with this grant?
You know, sustainability was, I think, by design, that's why this grant is for 4 years, and policy and practices kind of are changed over time through schools. That being said, though, when the position goes away, there always is some attrition in that focus, but we will be mindful to continue those practices. And we're hoping after 4 years that they become habit in schools, well-established practices.
Member Lacey.
Yes, along with this grant, are we going to do anything about getting these high sugar drinks out of our schools? Some of those juices are, quite frankly, worse than the pop they replace. I think that should be one of our focuses, is get rid of that kind of stuff.
And we absolutely, that can be something that we address right away through the District Wellness Committee, reviewing all of the nutritional services, things that are provided, and through vendors.
All right, with no more discussion on this, let's move on. It's been moved and seconded. Is there any objection to allowing us to accept this and expend this grant on obesity prevention? Seeing no objection, this passes. We've moved down to action items.
I move action item 14-001, Curriculum Council Bylaws.
I'll second that.
He has been moved and seconded. Is there an administrative... Oh, I'm sorry. All of these action items are items that we have discussed before. So if anybody has further questions, let me know. But otherwise, I won't ask for an administrative report on these. So is there any discussion on this curriculum council bylaws?
Public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry. Public comment. It's been a whole month since I've run a meeting. Is there any public comment on this? Okay, seeing none, now we're on to discussion. Is there any discussion? Seeing no discussion on this, is there any objection to passing this? All right, action item A is now passed. Action item B, C, and D, I'm going to ask if we can combine B, C, and D. Is there approval from the board for that?
I will be happy to move B 14-002, Approval of New Math Courses, C-14-003, approval of Alaska literature course, and D-14-004, approval of foundations of human relations course.
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there any public discussion, anybody who wants to speak on this matter in the public? All right. Is there any discussion by the board on any of these? Mr. Cheesham.
Just a question for clarification. On the literature course, there's a list of books there. That's not exclusive or permanent. That's just there as an example of some of those are out of print. It's just to show an example of what might be included. It's not. Nothing in there says we can't do other books. But.
Correct, and I believe that was provided out of request. And so if you'd like further, I can have our curriculum coordinator who presented that come forward. But it is not an exhaustive list, no.
Is there any more discussion or comment on this? All right. Is there any objection to passing these combined 3, B, C, and D? Action items? All right, all three of those pass, B, C, and D.
I would like to move 14-005, New Kinnick Area Junior Senior High School name.
Can I have a second on that?
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Do we have any public comment on this item? All right, we're open for discussion. Member Lacey.
Yes, I'd like to point out that I was not allowed to vote on this since I am a constituent, since I have children in the system. It would not let me vote on this, and I'm just wondering how many other humans were not allowed to vote on this.
Did you...
Yes, I got onto the district's website using my home computer, and it said no.
Did that happen also? Oh, okay. All right. Did you call and check with the computer people?
No.
Okay. We can take your vote now. Do you want? All right. Member Cheesham.
Well, I... On the tally, there were 7 no votes. Is that the count of the attempts at voting? Is that what that means? So there might, we don't know how many. I know I've heard some others who said they were not able, they've got some Java junk message that they wouldn't allow them to vote, but I don't know if, I kind of thought maybe that 7 was how many people were kicked out and it wouldn't have made any difference.
I believe the 7 were, they were able to get on there and make comment that we did receive about this many folks that had a new name that they wanted to suggest.
Okay.
Go ahead. There were close to 900 calls, and this is... almost 600, so it is a pretty high percentage of response for the locale that it went out to, but then again, across the district, we were able to register on the internet, so we didn't have a separation of general district to the folks that we called individually.
Okay. Is there any discussion from the board? All right. Member Cheesham. Okay. I think this is one of the first times we've had a poll by the internet and let people vote, and I'm sorry it didn't work for you, Member Lacey, and I too wonder how many people it didn't work for. But this is the first time we've named a school this way, and I think it's really exciting and a good way to poll the general public. So if there is no objection to the name Joe Reddington Senior Junior High School. Junior Senior High School. Sorry. Joe Reddington Senior Junior Senior High School. That's a mouthful. It says junior, senior high school?
Through the president. When the new high school is built, it would be Joe Reddington Senior Middle School. But at this point in time, 7th through 12th grade students would attend, so it is a junior, senior high school.
Our 6th grade students will not be attending?
I believe 6th grade as well, yes. For this.
Okay.
Yeah. So we will take students out of Palm Junior Middle School, or Wasilla Middle, rather.
Okay. All right, Member Cheesham.
So kids are going to say, I go to senior, junior, senior school. Middle school, or something like that.
I don't know. Maybe it will be middle,
through
senior
the school. President, generally what they'll say is, I go to Reddington, probably, just like I go to Wasilla. But in the, it was very pointed that it would be named, the senior would be attached. That was quite evident in the group that worked on it, the community group. They wanted to be sure that it was the father of the Iditarod reference. May I interject something? We do have an elementary school that will need to be named soon. We did contact the Kinnick Tribal Council, who participated in this, and let them know the results before this meeting, but that you would be taking action. We do have an option to present next board meeting that the elementary school be the Denina Elementary School, if you would like, or we can hold off as well until the high school is built on the next rotation of the bond. And so there are just some other options that we can do that. And I just say this because we are urged by the borough project manager and the architects that the sooner we can get a school name, they really can incorporate that into the design of the building and use 1% for art on the design rather than the after phase.
I'm sorry, Mr. Lacey.
Yes, how do we make that happen, that we're going to name the elementary school Denina?
Go ahead. Through the president, if you would like, I will bring it forward at the next meeting as an action item.
All right. Okay, Mr. Cheesham.
I would very much like that.
Okay. All right. If there's no other comment on item E, we will go ahead and vote. Is there any objection to naming it Joe Reddington Senior, Junior, Senior High School? All right. Seeing no objection, that passes.
I would like to move 14-007, Assistant Principal New Hire at Houston Middle School.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Is there anyone in the public who would like to speak? All right, we'll move on to discussion. Is there any discussion on this item? All right. Is there any objection? That passes too. We're moving through the second half really quick.
I would like to move 14-012, transfer to CIP fund for FY13 charter school carryover.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded. Is there anybody in the public who would like to speak on this? All right, I'm going to ask administration to make a presentation, remind us of what this is and when it was added.
Madam President, thank you. This item was added just prior to the board agenda being formed. And in our district, previous to last night, we had an ordinance that allowed for a 50% lapse of funds, end of year funds, to go back to the borough. And however, within that procedure, there is an allowance that if projects are identified, funds may be held in a capital improvement project fund to be able to do those. And we shared Berryosova and some other projects that this board in previous years had voted 2 years ago. Member Lacey reminded me it was actually 2 years ago that the vote took place. What we like to do with charter schools, because of their funding goes directly to the school, both the state and the local share is equitable according to all schools, we like to offer them the same opportunity to create a capital improvement fund. Now, the amounts of funds on there add up to that $823,000. As of last night, there is a new ordinance that retros back to FY13 that allows for a 75-25 split of the lapse funds. In this case, we did have a request from one charter school that says, I really don't have any capital projects, so may I request the use of the funds that I'm allowed to keep for operational? And so this was designed prior to that ordinance coming through, but I would like the amount would never be more than that $823,000 to be allowed to be placed in a capital improvement, but it may be less because there has been a request by one charter school, and due to the change in the ordinance last night, I think it would be prudent that we offer all charter schools. If you don't want to put it in CIP at 100%, you can put your lapse funds at 75% into your operating budget. And they are two totally separate funds. And so one would capture 100% of the CIP, one would capture 75% of operating, turn these funds into that. And so that is a little caveat that just occurred because of an action at the Borough Assembly last night, very favorable to our district. And therefore, the request would be up to that $823,000, but no more. And again, this is something our district does as a whole, and each individual charter school operates with its own local board, and so the request is made individually as well. And if there's any questions, I can ask Luke to explain it further.
Member Larson.
Yeah, I'm really confused. Sorry. Okay. The $823,000, is there a lapse fund?
Through the president, yes. That is, it's unaudited, but that is, in our calculations, how much was left at each school at the end of the year.
Each charter school.
Correct.
And 25% of that lapse fund will go back to the borough now?
Through the president, in this document, in this board action, it is requesting that 100% of the funds be transferred to CIP so that nothing would be lapsed back. However, as of last night, because it's 75-25, and that being able to use it on teachers and books and texts and things, there has been a request that it's okay to lapse 25% if I can use it for more instruction.
So if it goes from CIP to instruction, then 25% the amount of that charter school would go back to the borough?
Yes, sir.
And who would... Who makes the decision, again, if it goes, since we put it into capital, to move it out of capital into operations?
Through the president. At this point in time, it is not in capital funds because we haven't made the action. But it is the APC at each charter school that votes on their budget.
So it's just hanging out right now?
If action isn't taken, 50% of the, 25 would lapse.
Now, if we take action tonight and put this into capital improvement money, and that's what you're asking us to do tonight, correct?
I've altered, through the president, what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to make a provision that up to $823,000 may be placed in capital improvement for charter schools. And then I would like to go to the charter schools and say, there was an ordinance passed last night. If you have a greater need for operational funds rather than building funds, project capital,
right.
It's a 75-25 split instead of a 50-50. And so I would like to offer that to charter schools.
And I'm sorry, and if I'm a charter school and I say I want operation, then I know that 25% has to go back to the borough, correct?
Through the president, we will make that absolutely clear.
Okay, thank you.
Member Cordero.
I move to amend the original motion to indicate the changes proposed by Superintendent Paramo.
I'll second that.
Okay, that's been moved and seconded. Member Rutherford.
So to clarify, had the ordinance not passed, the they never had the option of keeping even 50%
through
in operations.
Through the president, yes, that is what they had before.
Oh, they did have that option.
And we had a discussion, and they had all chosen to move it to capital because they do have building
needs. So they could
needs.
Have 100% instead
right.
of 50.
But they might reconsider now.
Now that they can keep a little bit more of it. So the, but it was my understanding that the rest of our general fund, the lapsed 50% of that, and now 75%, couldn't go into operating. It can?
Through the president, yes. If the 50%, it used to be the ordinance, 50% of the LATS funds can, and we actually placed $1,600,000 in our budget for this year. The district is happy this passed because we will use it for operation. We will use it for instruction. That's
right.
That's the goal, I believe, from the board to have more teachers. So.
Right, because we could do the same thing. We could move 100% into a identified capital project. But the difference being it may not go back to the school that didn't use it. Whereas here it goes back to the school that didn't use it.
Right. Through the president, and that's just the nature of the charter school. In the district, if a new playground is needed as a charter school because they have their funds, or a new floor is needed at a charter school, the charter school pays for that floor because they have all those funds. In a district, we are running it as a whole system, mm-hmm. and so you saw that the floor, after they opened up that well at Snowshoe, needed to be fixed. That did not come out of Snowshoe funds to be fixed. That came out of a district-wide operational fund. There we take care of everything. And mm-hmm. Therein lies the differences. I know they like to be compared a lot. A trade-off is that the district, you know, operations takes care of all the buildings.
Yep.
And so that is a difference, and, you know, it becomes kind of a sticky wicket sometimes, but mm-hmm. That is the occurrence. And so some of these schools, for instance, Fronteras wants to build their capital fund as much as possible. They do not want it to go into operational because they know where they are going to move. And so they want to save their money to be able to afford the move. They're planning ahead. Whereas there has been a request by American Charter Academy that says, we just updated our building last year. We put a lot in capital. I want to spend this on teachers and instruction. And so I think I want that 75%. So it is really an APC decision with their principal.
Just a quick follow-up. The but can Fronteras save that for? That doesn't sound like a specific identified project. Or is it just our future building is specific enough?
Through the president, yes, ma'am. They have the property assigned, and they're doing dirt work on it. It is actually going to be located next to Matsu Day School.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we're going to vote on the amendment to make the changes that Dr. Paramo mentioned. Is there any objection to the changes to the motion? Okay, there's no objection. Okay, so we're back to the original motion. Is there any objection to passing this original CIP fund transfer or into operations for these charter schools?
Madam President, as
yes.
amended, right?
As amended,
as
yes.
amended.
Okay. All right. So is there any objection to that? See, no objection. All right, that passes. We are down to non-action items. Item A is Matsu iTech APEX contract approval for online learning. I don't think we move and second this. This is just an item for discussion. Can we have a administrative report on this, please?
Yes, Madam President. I request Kathy Moffitt, our program director, program administrator, all around help with APEX learning and online learning, to come forward to speak to this. The request is made for this year's payment, but we to get the deal, if you will, the reduction on the percentage of the cost, we did present what it would look like over the 5 years, or 3 years, rather. Ms. Moffitt, please.
Hi. My name is Kathy Moffitt, and I'm program administrator for Matsui Tech. APEX has been in our district for the last 3 years. It's used in the Advanced Path program. Last year was our first year in using it, and it offers students an added value program of choice. We had over 1,000 completed courses at the end of last semester, so it has grown. What we've done is we've negotiated with a company to work out a 3-year price so it would set it at the current value. And through it, we are saving over $100,000 each year. And part of that is in the platform of communication. So we're getting that for free. So that's quite a bit savings. We also see, as you'll note, that we have seats for advanced placement courses, and students would have the opportunity to take Mandarin, Chinese, Latin, German, and that would be through ALHS. And then you can see that we also have days there for professional development.
Member Lacey?
Yes. How does this differ from Advanced Path or Matsu Central School's offering? And could the students get the same thing from Matsu Central, and we would therefore have another student enrolled in that school and be getting more money for that student as opposed to spending money, in this case $500,000, on the computer program? Inquiring minds would like to know.
Through the president, this APEX is a system used. It is the curriculum used in Advanced Path, but Advanced Path actually offers more support and structure for kids who found working independently a struggle. So we actually, Advanced Path provides more adult assistance in blended learning. Mm-hmm. Where students can accelerate. APEX is the cyber centers that we had set up in each of our schools. Allows students a broader range of courses that they don't have at their high school right now. And it's used actually all the way down into middle school as well. We've used it for, you know, advanced placement. We'll be using it for credit recovery. Matsu Central School uses APEX as well as Compass Learning for some online learning. If a student were to leave, say, Palmer High School, where APEX is offered, and enrolled in Matsu Central School, we'd actually receive less funds to the district because we get 80% funds. This is just to provide courses to students, courses for which we don't have, and some of our more rural areas and high schools to offer courses that they don't actually have in their schools. So it's basically just a choice program to prepare kids for the next level when they move on. Most colleges now use online learning and to prepare kids for that.
Member Lacey?
Yes. If this program ended, say, tonight, we can offer the same stuff through Advanced Path and Matsu Central. Am I not correct in that assumption?
Through the president, that assumption is not correct. The courses at Advanced Path are primarily remedial, some of them, and basic level courses. And Matsu Central's courses, Matsu Central uses APEX through this contract. This supports, this provides Matsu Central online learning. The other curriculum sometimes that they use is Compass Learning, but APEX is the online learning system that is approved for advanced learners as well for advanced placement. And so what we found is it offers the remediation on grade level work as well as it advanced. And so they, although the curriculum program is similar, Advanced Path does not use all the courses that have been approved through this. They're basically a credit recovery program to get kids who are at risk to graduate, whereas the full scope of APEX is offered to all students for courses which sometimes are not even offered at their school.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Member Lacey.
Okay, I go and visit schools, and I'm just going to tell you what the consensus of things that I've heard in our schools is, that kids take these classes, they go and take the classes in what, I don't know, a week maybe, and then they're running around the school. I want children to learn, don't get me wrong, but I'm just curious if this is $500,000, is this a good use of our funds?
Through the president, could you just comment on how long it would take for someone to complete this course?
Yes, typically it takes about 60 to 70 hours to complete a course. It does. And we can log, we can see the login time, we can see how much time students have spent. Certainly if someone is dedicated and wants to dedicate their time to it, they can finish it in a shorter amount of time. But the reason we chose APEX was we did the research, and it's pretty rigorous. In fact, some of our students that have taken face-to-face class and then taken an online course, they would say that the online is more rigorous, especially in the language. So it was designed to really facilitate the need for advanced placement courses, and then they have broadened it to meet the needs across the nation of other student needs.
Member Carly Wilson, Williams, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Ms. Williams.
As a student, I've seen a lot of kids who've liked APEX. They like taking their online classes. I've seen a lot of kids say they're harder, but I've also seen students who, once APEX was offered at all the high schools, were able to go on exchanges because they could take all their required classes after school, before school, so that they could also get all those done so they could go on exchanges. Then I've seen students who can take their regular courses, standard level courses, and then be able to take accelerated courses at the same time or a year ahead. I did that this year where I took online courses for my history classes, and then I was able to take advanced science and advanced writing just because it freed up my schedule. So I really want to applaud your endeavors in looking for more ways to offer kids more classes and looking for ways to better fit students' needs.
Thank you. Member Cordero.
Just from experience in my own family, APEX has actually served as purpose. My son took APEX classes last year, and it worked for him. Because remember, all students, they don't all learn the same way, and the more opportunities that we offer them to get them engaged, the better we are. Some thrive in a classroom setting, some thrive in an online setting, some are okay with homeschooling. It's not a cookie cutter deal. We just have to be able to provide those opportunities for all those students.
Right. Member Welton.
Thank you. I have heard good things, and there's more testimonial about the good things. I'd like to know more about the students that don't do well with this. Do you know how many students were unable to complete courses? Do you have those numbers?
I don't have those numbers. I could get some for you. We know typically that students that might struggle with reading might have a difficult time. We also know ways to scaffold help for them. One of the advantages to APEX is that it offers pathways of learning, one being Literacy Advantage, where it has the script is read to you and it's broken down into smaller pieces to provide better success for the student learner.
Okay, thank you.
Member Rutherford.
Since funding for TAG, Talented and Gifted, became combined with other funding and wasn't its own independent funding, there was a perception, real or not, that TAG got a little short, the short end of the stick there. And I found from asking around this last year that APEX has really helped in that area. For just as Ms. Williams said, for the students that wanted some advanced classes and they didn't have that opportunity at their school. When I went to Barry Ozova, the young man who graduated, and he graduated with a lot of scholarships. He was really a highly commended student. And he told me about, it was a very high level class he took, like mm-hmm. physics or mm-hmm. something. And he raved about it, and he was so appreciative of the fact that he could take it there at his at his school, at his home school, and it worked well for him.
All right, Member Larson.
Last year at AASB conference, we broke into small groups where the students were in our groups. It was board members and students from different locations through the state. And their biggest complaint in rural Alaska was the school does not offer upper-level courses. And what I like about this is our more rural schools now can get those upper-level courses online and do well with them. And that's what they were asking. And I asked them, why don't they get online? Well, their servers aren't up. They can't even get them because of the physical structure. But to know that Trapper Creek as well as Glacier View, all the way up to Glacier View, can get advanced classes in those schools, it's a wonderful thing. And for those that don't do well on them, I had to have Luke open up my email tonight, so I confess I would do terrible on online. But knowing my grandkids and my children, I would excel on this thing. So thank you.
Well, thank you, really appreciate the comments. My feeling, I have several feelings. One is that this online learning in general is with us, and it's with us for a long time. But I want to say that we have thousands of years of experience with face-to-face learning, and we know how to recognize learning in the face-to-face situation. We have not had that much time to develop what is real, good online teaching. And I've heard that the positive things I hear about online teaching are having to do with the hoops that we go through. They get us through the hoops. Read 15 screens, and then we do on the computer, and then we write a short answer, do a little short answer response to it, and then we take a test, and we